son came after she moved to 29 Palms with her husband from Tennessee. She came here to find a horse, to volunteer, and to enjoy herself with the horse riding. She took responsibility for a rescue horse and had her here until she can move her to 29 Palms Marine Base. I knew she loved horses, and that's what we do here at the rescue and the mission.
19 years old and 3 months pregnant, she vanished without a trace Saturday morning in what police describe as suspicious circumstances. Homicide investigators now leading the search in Joshua Tree National Park.
It's a lot of sitting and waiting and praying. You know, every time the phone rings or whatever, you're hoping that maybe there's some news.
Jonathan Corwin said his wife, who found out 2 weeks before she went missing that she was pregnant, was headed to Joshua Tree to scout areas to take pictures during an upcoming visit from her mother. 2 days after her disappearance, Aaron's blue 2013 Toyota Corolla was found near the Condor Gate at the east side of the base.
I was told they had found a body approximately 140 feet in a mine shaft.
They detected propane gasoline fumes. From what they described, it sounded pretty precarious. Just as far as the soil type we were facing, how deep in the environment it was, it seemed like a pretty questionable entrance. And I started descending down about 100 to 140 feet. It was a lot deeper than I've ever been. It was eerie, rock collapsing, snakes, and also just the heat. It was about 110 degrees topside. I believe it was about 90 degrees downside. So working in that environment, you only have a limited amount of time effectiveness before you're quickly fatigued. A Sprite bottle, a rope, tire down there, a propane tank, some plastic jugs, a lot of rock and rock debris, some railroad ties. Obviously, we see a lot of death in this line of work. Over time, you just develop a method where you just ignore your emotions for a little while and you just on the task you need to do and then, you know, face up with your emotions later.
Welcome back to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
And the episode that we're doing today is Lured, The Vanishing of Aaron Corwin. So Aaron Corwin was a young wife of a Marine. She loved horses. And then she thought she was in love with a man who wasn't her husband. She'd been led astray with an extramarital relationship. And then she was lured to her death by an individual, or maybe two individuals, who can only be described as heartless and cruel. What in Aaron's life led her to this tragic end? Or are we all susceptible to be victims of evil and disregard for human life? This will be a big part of our discussion, but first I'd like to read a couple of 5-star reviews and get the beer poured.
Yeah, let's get that beer poured.
I know, that's important. Let's see what I have. I have They Keep Getting Better by A Time to Listen. I've been listening for a while and have always been a fan, but the last few episodes have been amazing. You can see that these two put a lot of work into this podcast. Sometimes I listen twice while waiting for a new episode to drop. Thank you, Jill and Dick. I highly recommend this one.
Well, that's a nice review.
That's a great one. So A Time to Listen, welcome to the brewery.
Welcome. And I do think we're getting better.
I hope so.
And not just because we've been doing this for a few months, but I think we've kind of found our rhythm or something. It just seems to me like the last few episodes are going a lot better than the bunch of the previous ones.
Okay, well, that's good. And the next one is Hell Yes, TCB by And I Mean It, Damn It. As a guy who loves craft beer and listens to true crime podcasts, I'm in heaven with this podcast. As a bonus, Dick and Jill are a charming, loving couple who share intelligent conversations with their listeners. Highly recommend, even if you don't like beer.
Well, how can you not like beer?
I know.
That's a rhetorical question. Anyway, thanks for the review.
Yeah.
And if you are a craft beer drinker, I think you ought to submit an entry into the beer review contest that we're having.
Yeah, that's good until
January 1st. We still got like 3 weeks.
Oh, there's plenty of time.
So get that review in. You might be the lucky winner.
That's right. You win a shirt, a snifter, and a coaster.
Yeah.
And who knows? We might throw something else in just to surprise you. We're like that.
We could. Yeah. I might send you beer even.
Wow, that'd be cool. Yeah. I bet you would. You like to send people beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, and I mean it, damn it. Welcome to the brewery, damn it.
Damn right.
What's the beer? I think it's a good one tonight.
The beer is a beer from California, obviously, because we're in a California crime. I went with one called Supplication, which is brewed by Russian River Brewing Company in Santa Rosa, California. Now, Russian River is known for their sour beers. Supplication is one of them. This is an American wild ale. And by that I mean it's a beer that is introduced to wild yeast or bacteria, such as Brettanomyces, Pediococcus, or Lactobacillus. So the introduction of these little critters can occur from previously inoculated oak barrels, just pitched into the beer, or gained from various sour mash techniques. When I say that, I'm reminded of making sourdough bread, where you add the mash or the what you call it?
Mix.
The mix to everything to make the sourdough. So these little creatures, I call them creatures because they're cute little bacteria and yeast.
Right.
They leave a funky calling card that can be strange, interesting, pleasing, or to a lot of people, undesirable.
Well, what's wrong with those people?
Well, I don't know, but there's a ton of people that just don't like sours.
Yeah, okay.
Fortunately, you're not one of them.
I'm not, but everybody has their different tastes, so that's okay. More sours for me.
That's right. So Supplication is just a world-class beer. I'll say that
up front.
I'll say that up front.
Okay.
The first time I had this was probably about 10, 12 years ago. I was at a birthday party for a friend who owns a couple beer bars in Maine, Chris and Jen Lively.
Oh, yeah. Ebenezer's.
Ebenezer's. Let's put a plug in.
Sure.
Because anybody who comes to Maine and you're in the Mid-Coast or in the Lakes region, go to Ebenezer's.
It's an amazing place, yeah.
It's absolutely amazing.
If you like beer, you'd love it there.
Just can't be beat. Anyway, I had this. I traded some beer with Chris. He said, here, try this California beer I just got. And this is the kind of guy he is. I mean, he hadn't even tried it himself, and he gave me the bottle.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So I've had a few since, but it's a copper-colored beer with a hint of red, a little bit on the hazy side, and it's got a very pretty pink-tinged head. It has a sour cherry and funky aroma, and funky to me means kind of outdoorsy, barnyardy type of thing, horse blanket, you know.
Horse blanket.
And some wooden and oak aroma. The taste follows the nose perfectly. It's a sour and tart beer, light-bodied, fairly low alcohol by volume, so it's extremely drinkable if you're into sours.
I'm into sours.
I know. We're going to find some.
I think they're the best beers out there, especially if you're not really into stouts and heavy beers. If you like wine, if you like ciders, if you like something a little lighter, sours are awesome.
Sours are. Although you're pretty interesting because you like IPAs a lot too.
I do.
And there's a fairly big difference between the two. So
they're both really good in their own way.
You have a pretty cool palate.
Well, I'm pretty proud of it, yeah.
Yeah, I would be.
Well, let's open this up because I'm looking forward to it.
Let's open this sucker and go down to the quiet end.
Awesome.
So the quiet end is a little quiet right now, but it's Monday night.
And so? You know what that means. No, I don't. What's Monday night?
Monday night football.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And not only that.
Yeah.
The Patriots are on tonight.
Wow. It might get rowdy in here.
It might get raucous and rowdy.
So we have to finish before the game starts.
We'd best be done before then. And not only is it the Patriots, they're playing one of their hated rivals. The Ravens, someone in the Ravens hierarchy, is rumored to be the force behind the Deflategate conflict, where the Patriots were accused of using underinflated footballs, and we know where
They did, didn't they? He was suspended. I think he did do it. He threw away a phone or something.
Don't go there.
Well, so you're saying that these people told on Tom?
They told.
Okay. Well.
So they don't like each other.
Well, good.
And I know probably the whole rest of the country thinks the Patriots are a bunch of cheaters anyway, but I'm a Patriots guy.
I know you are.
And they can do no wrong. And this this was a non-issue that shouldn't have ever come to what it came to. But I'm going to leave it at that. They don't like each other. I'm looking for a great game tonight.
Okay.
And I think the Patriots are going to win.
Should be fun. You'll have fun with that while I'm editing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to be cursing at the TV.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Let's start this crime. This is a horrific crime.
Well, most of them are.
I know they are.
This one's super sad.
But this is a sad thing.
Yeah. So we're talking about Erin, who was murdered when she was only 19 years old. So she was just 3 weeks old, and she was about 5.5 pounds when she went into the care of a foster family. She was well received there, almost like a living doll, because she had older sisters, quite a bit older, like in their teens. And then at the age of 3 years, her foster family officially adopted her.
So why was she given up for adoption, do we know?
We don't know anything about that.
My guess would be a teenage single mom.
Sometimes that's what it is, yeah.
Because it was fairly early after birth.
Yeah, it seems like it was right at birth that she was put into foster care.
That's just supposition.
Right. So she was adopted at 3. So this is her family from the time she was a baby.
Yeah. It's all she's known, basically.
Yeah. But she was a shy little girl, and she started caring for horses at the East Tennessee Riding Club. And this is where her family and friends say that she gained some confidence. Because when she was with the horses, Erin wasn't the quiet girl who kind of hid in the corner. She was comfortable and strong and confident, kind of a new person when she was around the animals.
Yeah, I guess she really blossomed when she was around horses.
Yep. So she met a man who would become her husband way back when she was in middle school. And they dated through high school, and then shortly after graduation, John Corwin joined the Marine Corps. And he asked Erin to marry him when she was only 18 years old. She was really excited and said yes right away. And then in November of 2012, John and Erin eloped to Las Vegas. And they had one of those Vegas chapel weddings right after a Marine Corps ball.
Well, you know what I think.
Too young?
18 is way too young. And what was he, 19?
Yeah, I mean, a year older.
That's way too young.
Way too young.
Here's my crotchety old man stuff again. Plus, they've been dating each other since junior high.
Well, I think they just met in junior high. They dated in high school.
I mean, I would just like to know what the statistics are of people that dated all through high school and got married, and how many of them stayed married.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely a marriage that was at risk from the beginning.
Yeah. And we know what, I mean, half of all marriages end in divorce anyway. And I'll bet more than half if you're a teenager.
I bet you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though Erin's mother knew that John was a good guy, she worried about Erin. She wondered, how is Erin going to adapt to the life of a military spouse? So not only is she young and right out of high school, but he's going to be going off and being deployed, and she's going to be home alone.
Right, and she's going to be far away from her parents.
Yes. So she'd be alone while John was deployed, and her mom worried about her making new friends as well. And she was kind of reassured that she was in base housing because then she's around other wives. But still, it concerned her. Because John was assigned to the 29 Palms Marine Base out in the California desert. So she grew up in Tennessee, and then had to move to California. That's a long ways.
A long ways, yep. And a whole different climate, a whole different attitude.
Culture.
Culture. I mean, that's a big move.
It is.
And she's newly married.
Yes. So they were very young, but they wanted to start a family, which I think is pretty common with military families. The wife's home. She has kids.
Yeah,
because a lot of them don't work. It's hard to keep a job when you're moving.
My experience is that the husband's primary breadwinner and the wife is usually home with the kids.
Yeah. And that's what she wanted, though. She seemed to want that. So she did become pregnant soon after she moved to California. But then in early 2014, she had a miscarriage. So about 4 months later, Erin was pregnant again. So this was June of 2014, and she decided to wait to tell her mom about the pregnancy because her mom was planning a visit a few weeks away from when she found out. So she said to her friend, I'm going to wait until my mom when she visits.
Yeah, I can see that. Plus, she'd already had the one miscarriage.
Yeah, and then she might want to wait a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get further along in the pregnancy.
That makes sense. So on June 28th, Erin woke up around 7 a.m., and before she left the house, she kissed her husband goodbye. She told him that she was going to scout out some good hiking locations at Joshua Tree National Park, and this was in anticipation of her mom's upcoming visit, she said.
Yeah.
So they'd have a place to go do things. She was kind of outdoorsy.
Right, and it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom's never been out here. I'm going to find her things to entertain her.
But there's been trouble in this marriage already, which we're going to find out about. So things weren't picture perfect.
So the excuse was I'm going to Joshua Tree to look for places. But the reality was she was meeting her lover.
Well, John expected her home that afternoon, and she didn't return. John called and texted her over 50 times that night. And when she hadn't responded or returned home by the next morning, he called Erin's mom, and then he called 911. So Erin's mom, who said that Erin had a horrible sense of direction, thought that maybe Erin had gotten lost in the park while hiking. So her first concern was, did Erin have enough water? And she thought there'd be a search and rescue, and they'd find her.
Well, my concern would be how come it took the husband till the next day to call the police.
Yeah, other people thought that was suspicious, too. Now, the San Bernardino County Sheriff Department was notified of Erin's disappearance by the local police, and Detective Travis Newport called Erin's mom, and he wondered if maybe Erin had left her husband and was driving back to Tennessee. But Erin's mom didn't think that that was likely, because, see, Erin really didn't like to drive long distances, and she hadn't said anything to her mom about coming back.
So did the policeman know that there were marital troubles? Why is he suggesting that she might have decided to come home?
I would think it's not that unusual with young couples.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
You know, you move to the base, it sucks, you're lonely, you go back to your parents.
Yeah.
That probably happens.
You're right. I think, actually, in hindsight, second thought, that's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah. So John got some of his Marine buddies together, and they went to search for Erin in the Joshua Tree National Park. So this is a huge park, a huge area of nearly 800,000 acres.
Wow.
Of desolate desert, rough rock formations. And John and his buddies spent that entire day searching the park. But they came up with nothing, no trace of her.
Yeah, but I'll bet you could hide a body in there and it would take forever to find it.
I don't think at this point they're thinking about a body. That's not the first thing your mind's going to go to.
But there's 800,000 acres?
Huge, huge area.
Huge, rough terrain?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a daunting task, trying to find something in there.
Well, John was really worried now. So he was the first person that investigators looked at as a suspect in her disappearance.
Of course, he's the spouse.
Yeah. So they found out that the young couple did have some marital problems. So John was this very stoic person, and Erin questioned whether he really cared about her, and that became a point of contention between them. So John told police that Erin had had trouble coping with her miscarriage in early 2014, and he just wasn't sure how to help her. Well, look, he's a 19-year-old boy.
Yeah.
How would he know how to help her?
He wouldn't.
Yeah.
And it didn't take long after the marriage and the move for problems to arise.
No, because honestly, they were kids. Because they're not even precocious, mature teens. These are kids.
These are kids
from the South.
Average intelligence, it seems.
Yeah.
And I'll bet it's the first time that the husband's been anywhere far away from home, too.
Yeah, they've had kind of sheltered lives.
Yeah. So they move across the country, or almost across the country, to alien culture.
Right.
And they've got each other. to take care of.
And that's it, among strangers.
That can be tough.
Yeah, definitely. But Aaron's mom knew that the couple had had money troubles as well. They were living on John's salary alone, and that would pay the bills, but there was none left over for anything extra. And I guess that Aaron had racked up a bit of credit card debt. So in an effort to get control of the spending, John had taken Aaron's credit card. And she didn't like that, so the two had had an argument about that, and she was angry with him about that, John said.
Yeah, and I asked about this earlier, but the investigators in the case wondered why John hadn't reported Aaron missing until the next day.
Right.
But John thought he had to wait 24 hours before reporting her missing.
I think that's something I thought when I was younger. Because that's what they say on TV.
I mean, you see that on TV, right?
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been 24 hours. We don't report them as missing until 24 hours.
Well, I think that's true in a lot of cases, unless there's something suspicious like this.
Right.
So I think it's reasonable that he waited until the next morning.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that's a red flag.
I mean, they did have marital problems, so...
Sure.
She could have went off with a girlfriend or something.
And he did seem concerned, but wasn't very emotional.
Yeah.
So there's some other stuff. The other thing was his search for Aaron in the Joshua Tree Park. Maybe it was a ploy to explain his presence.
That's what the police considered.
At the last place Aaron had been. Or was he a genuinely concerned husband? Who was out looking for his wife.
Yeah.
But still, there's no evidence yet that any harm had come to Aaron.
No, there's not. It's not like her car keys and purse and everything were at home.
Right.
Her car was gone. She had left the house. So it's not super suspicious at this point.
Yeah, it's still possible she left on her own, right?
Right.
So investigators continued to interview people who knew Aaron. They learned that Aaron had been lonely when she first arrived at the base, but she made friends with the close-knit neighbors. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
They had a particular friendship with a couple who were originally from Alaska, Chris and Nicole Lee. They had cookouts together. Aaron and Nicole were both into horses. Nicole introduced Aaron to the White Rock Horse Rescue Ranch and its owner, Isabel Megley. Mm-hmm. And that's where Aaron was working, or volunteering.
Volunteering, yeah. Yeah. Well, Isabel had started her horse rescue back in 2004, and she told Dateline's Andrea Canning that the Marine wives were often lonely, and many of them would come to her ranch and volunteer and spend time with the horses, as well as with one another.
Sure. I think that's a great thing. I mean, it's therapeutic both for the horses and for the people taken care of.
Yeah, it's really kind of an ideal situation in that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, eventually, John, who was Aaron's husband, and Chris, who was Nicole's husband, began coming to the ranch with Aaron and Nicole. And what John said is that they'd go shooting or they'd take a dune buggy out while the women were spending time with the horses, and they became friends. So Chris Lee had returned from deployment in Afghanistan, and he had issues. And he began to share those issues with Aaron. So Nicole and Chris, they had a young daughter named Liberty, and Aaron often helped out by babysitting the six-year-old daughter.
Now, it's interesting to me, when they'd go to the horse rescue place, that the guys would hang out together and do things, and the women would tend to the horses. But who does Chris confide in about his difficulties but Aaron?
Right. But I don't think the guys confide in each other that much. Am I wrong?
Well, I think they do.
Really?
Maybe not real deeply.
Right.
But I think if I'm pretty good friends with a guy, I'm going to talk to him.
About things like depression, trauma?
I would talk to him about marital issues and whether I was happy or not.
Okay. Well, I don't think they did a lot of that.
Apparently not.
So when Isabel noticed one day that Aaron and Chris were acting oddly close, she actually was disturbed enough by it that she told Chris's wife, Nicole, because they were giggling and kind of had an inside joke, and Isabel thought that was weird.
They looked a little closer than they should have.
Right. So she told Nicole, but Nicole said, hey, don't worry about it. They're just friends. They bonded over some of their sadness because Aaron had sadness over her miscarriage and Chris had sadness from Afghanistan, I guess. So Nicole didn't seem worried about it at that point. But then 2 months later, Nicole totally changed her opinion on this.
Yeah, because she found out that things were going on between her husband and Aaron.
Right. So she called John and she told him that Aaron and Chris had been having an affair. And believing that the affair was over, John forgave Aaron. And he was even able to forgive Chris.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
It's a big thing.
And they still eventually continued hanging out together and doing things together.
Yeah, John said it was never the same, but they were able to hang out together again.
I'm sure it wasn't ever the same.
Right.
But that's, to me, that's a pretty big thing.
Well,
I don't think I'd have that much forgiveness.
No, but this husband seems forgiving. He seems like a kind guy. Maybe a bit naive.
I think you're being kind enough to him. I think I would describe him as naive and passive.
Yeah.
At least the interviews we've seen.
Right. But those aren't necessarily bad things. He's 19.
Right.
He's naive. He loved her. I think that's okay.
Okay.
Obviously, it didn't serve him well in the end, but I think he was trying. I think he was a good guy.
Yeah. I'm not implying he wasn't a good guy.
I
just don't think he was prepared.
No, I don't think they were prepared either. I think you're right. So when investigators learned that Aaron had been unfaithful, then they really wondered if John had done something to her. So John told detectives that Aaron had ended the affair with Chris and that they had reconciled, and they'd even rescued their friendship with Nicole and Chris. But investigators soon learned that Aaron's relationship with Chris had still been going on, even up until the day that she vanished.
So she told her husband that things were over, and Chris told his wife, Nicole, that things were over.
Apparently. And they continued to hang out.
But they continued having the affair.
Yes. So one of Aaron's best friends back in Tennessee was still in touch with Aaron, and she told investigators that she talked and texted with Aaron daily. The friend said that Aaron was making plans to leave John and have a future with Chris. So the friend told police that Aaron planned to marry Chris. Then she told them that Aaron said that Chris was taking her on a special trip that day, that she disappeared.
Well, that sounds like a big break in the case.
Yes.
You know?
That's a huge red flag coming up.
Uh-huh.
So
he's taking her on a special trip, or special date, and she happens to disappear.
Yeah.
All right.
Her texts suggested that Chris might propose to Aaron in the park that day. That's what Aaron was thinking. And she'd also told the friend that she thought that Chris was the father of her baby, because she was pregnant. So she said she thought that Chris was the father, not John. So I don't know how true that was.
Well, I guess if you're having sex with two different guys I guess if you're having sex with two guys, it might get confusing as to who the father of the child is.
Yes, it could. It could. But if it was Chris's baby, that would increase Chris's motive to do something to Aaron if he's gotten her pregnant.
Right.
So police talked to John to see if maybe he'd known that the baby wasn't his, and that had made him angry, and maybe that had been his motive to hurt Aaron. So they talked to him about that, and he didn't know.
No, he was pretty clueless. He thought that Aaron was pregnant with his baby and that they were staying together. So if you talk to John, everything was good.
Yeah.
They worked out their differences. His wife was pregnant with his child. They're going to live happily ever after.
I think he really thought that, yeah.
But the stress still had taken a toll on John. People who knew him believed he was innocent, but many on the base looked at him with suspicion. There was some stuff going on. I guess he ended up being considered mentally unstable by the Marine Corps.
Well, if your wife's missing, it's you they're looking at. I mean, we've seen Gone Girl. We know how it works.
That's right. So they considered him mentally unstable, and they took his guns away, and he was put on leave. So hope they were paying him while this was
going on. So it had a huge effect on him.
For sure.
And can you imagine that he found out, well, your wife's pregnant with maybe someone else's baby. They were still having the affair. And this is all happening while he's worried and looking for his wife.
Yeah.
So that's just a lot for him to deal with.
Life gets pretty sucky sometimes, doesn't it?
I mean, certainly.
That's horrible.
Yeah, I feel bad for him.
So there finally was a breakthrough in the case. A local woman saw Aaron's car on the side of the road about 5 miles away from the Joshua Tree Park entrance. So she'd seen the car on June 28th, which was the day Aaron disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Then on June 30th, another local person saw the car, and that's the one who notified the police.
And the woman who'd first seen it on the 28th actually took some pictures of it.
Right.
So the police had those to look at.
So then in addition to finding the car, they found tire tracks and footprints around the car, in front of the car. And Aaron's mom heard about this, and she just knew something bad had happened. Well, I think everybody would figure out something bad had happened.
Yeah, her car's abandoned out there. That's a really bad sign.
So, but because the car was found about 5 miles from the park entrance, the police ended up wondering if they were searching the right area. So they needed to expand the search a little bit more.
Well, and it was already a huge area they were searching. They've got this massive park. Yeah. Covered in rock formations.
Rocks.
And mines and stuff.
And there's old mine shafts.
Yeah.
And cactus and hills and holy cow.
Right. So now they're talking another 5 miles out in the boonies. It's a huge area to search. So deputies had first spoken with Chris Lee on June 29th, and that was the day that Aaron was first reported missing. And he told them that the extent of his interactions with Aaron had been limited to just waving hi in the apartment hallway. Now, why would he do this? He thinks that they're not going to find out?
He thinks he can get away with things, so he's going to be the innocent party.
But why wouldn't he admit to their friendship? People are going to know that the four of them were friends.
Well, yeah, but that's part of waving to her and acknowledging her.
I just think...
He's certainly not going to admit to being intimate with her after the fact, right?
Well, I mean... Yeah, but he's evil, he's a creep, and he's dumb.
Well, yes, we're going to find all that out, aren't we?
Right, so I wonder what attracted her to him. He must have been selling her some stories that he must have been faking some charm that I can't figure it out.
He's probably older, right?
Yeah, he was 27.
Okay, so he's 8, 9 years older.
Yep.
And he's been deployed.
Right.
So... Maybe he's told her what a hero he was, or...
Ew.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. She's
but
young.
I think just, she's 18, 19 years old, and he's an older guy.
Sure.
And he's paying attention to her.
But how stupid is it to say that he'd only seen her in the halls and waved? I mean, anybody, the horse lady, the people at local stores, I mean, everyone's going to know that they at least knew each other.
Yeah, but he's hoping that it doesn't go beyond that.
Well, that's really dumb.
Yes.
Yes, he's underestimating the police in a major way.
Well, he is. I mean, they already know or knew pretty quickly that they're having an affair.
Yes, they knew that at this point, but they didn't let on.
So saying, we just waved to each other.
They just kind of let him dig his own grave there.
Disingenuous at best.
Absolutely. And then 2 days after Aaron's disappearance, police decided to have a formal interview with Chris at the police station. And detectives wanted to know why Chris hadn't admitted right away that he and Aaron were more than just friends.
Well, who would do that?
He hadn't even said they were friends.
But still.
If you didn't do anything wrong, you would admit everything. I would.
No.
Because you want the truth to come out. Once you lie, you look guilty.
Well, of course you do. But at the same time, I'm not going to admit to having an affair with her because that's going to put me higher on the suspect list.
But if he was a decent person, he would be worried about her and he'd say, oh my God, you know, I really cared about her. I was having an affair with her. You know, how can I help?
I guess if you put it that way.
He's just kind of a sleazoid.
Right. And that's not how he's thinking anyway. He's thinking, I got to pretend I don't even know this woman because otherwise I'll be a suspect.
Right. Well, this guy just changes his story so many times.
That
he does. Ridiculous. Yeah. So he said that he'd been depressed after returning from Afghanistan and that Aaron was someone for him to talk to. And he said Aaron had confided to him that John was physically abusing her. He said the two of them bonded over their unhappiness. And then he told police that he didn't think their relationship was pertinent to the case, and that's why he hadn't mentioned it.
See?
Yeah, right.
And backing up, we don't have any evidence that John was abusive to her.
No. I don't believe he was.
No. He was madly in love with her. He wouldn't have done anything to her.
No. And he really seemed like the sweetheart. So at first, Chris insisted that he and Aaron had never had sex. So his lies just continue, but he keeps, like, admitting a little more.
Yeah, but...
like, at first, she's a lady he just sees in the hallway.
The more he does that, the deeper he gets.
Right.
He's going to get
screwed.
He's
an idiot.
Yeah, he is.
Because first, I just see her in the hallway and wave at her sometimes. And then next, well, we're friends. And then next, well, we bonded, but we never had sex. And just stepping.
Yeah.
Stepping out on the plank further and further.
Right, because he has to admit to things. I mean, the police know what was going on. So he's got to come up with the affair eventually.
Well, yes, and I would just say that if he's innocent, he would want to be honest so that they could figure out what's going on and find her.
Well, as you said, he's stupid.
Stupid, and he's not innocent.
And he's not innocent.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, if you're smart, you do what you said. Yes, we were having an affair. It ended.
Right.
I'm really worried about her.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah.
Well, so he said they never had sex. They just kind of kissed and stuff. Stupid. He said that he told Aaron that he loved her and that they had actually discussed running away together. But then he decided he didn't want to because he didn't want to leave his 6-year-old daughter behind.
See, now that's admirable. Total bullshit, but admirable.
Yeah, okay. So Chris said his affair with Aaron ended abruptly when his wife found out about it.
I bet it did.
So.
Well, although it didn't end, but.
No, that was a lie.
But yeah, the spouse finds out, that's a sure way to end things.
Yeah. So that's when he said that he learned that Aaron's claims of abuse by her husband were untrue. So he said he learned that she was lying to him about the abuse, which I don't understand why she would have done that.
Yeah, and what's that got to do with anything anyway?
He said that he was angry at her for lying about those things, and then he never spoke with her again after that, which we know is untrue.
Uh-huh.
Because detectives, of course, had the text messages between Aaron and her friend back in Tennessee. So these are the texts that showed the affair was still going on. So why would Aaron tell her friend that she was planning to meet Chris if she wasn't? He had an excuse for that, too.
He did?
Yeah.
What was that?
So Chris said, well, Aaron must have overheard me talking with my friends about a trip to the park that Saturday. So she lied to her friends and said that we were going there together.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Who's going to believe that?
I don't know.
Okay.
But why would she do that? Makes no sense.
None.
No. So Chris said that Aaron hadn't gotten over their breakup, and that's why she would do that.
I see.
I mean, that's how wonderful he was. She just couldn't live without him. So this was totally suspicious, of course. But then the police said, well, it's not totally uncommon for people who are in the military to lie about having an affair because they can get in trouble for that, I guess. It's against the rules when you're in the military to...
Yeah, I mean, you get demoted and stuff, but that's still a flimsy excuse.
Yeah, but they thought, well, it's possible he's lying for that reason and not because he did something to her.
Okay.
Plus, at this point, they have no evidence that, you know, anything really happened to her. of course, the car's there, so they're nervous about it.
There's an abandoned car.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And no Aaron.
Right.
So,
I mean, what are your options at that point? If her car's out in an abandoned area and she's gone, what are your options besides murder?
The only other option would be, I guess, if they found tire tracks with her car, that somebody met her and picked her up and they went off together.
Yeah, okay. But we wouldn't know if she went on her own voluntarily or if she was taken.
No, we wouldn't know that.
Well, they pressed Chris about his whereabouts that day. And he told this story, which was just ridiculous. It went around in circles, made no sense.
It's a great story. I think he was putting it together as he went along.
Yeah, not doing a good job.
No, he clearly hadn't thought it out beforehand.
No, he told this story of driving to Joshua Tree National Park to hunt coyotes. Is that something people do?
I don't know.
What would you do with a coyote? You don't eat them.
No.
So why would you hunt them? Just to be an asshole and kill an animal for no good reason?
Probably.
That makes me really hate him more.
Yeah, see? Yeah. I knew you'd like him.
So, then he said that he'd shot his rifle 4 or 5 times at some rocks. He's a real genius.
Those aren't coyotes. Unless they're rocks disguised as coyotes. Or coyotes disguised as rocks.
Well, he's just warming up on the rocks for when the coyotes come.
When the coyotes show up, he's ready to plug them.
So he said that he encountered another man while he was out there, though, and the other man had a gun. And he said that the man had fired a handgun in his direction, though he couldn't be sure if the man had meant to fire at him.
Well, now, come on.
So I don't know what this is about.
Can't you tell if someone's pointing a gun at you, they're fucking firing the gun at you?
Well, right? Are they firing at you or at rocks?
Did the coyote rocks stand up behind Chris?
I don't know.
I mean, that's just beyond belief.
Yeah. So why do you think he was making up this thing about the man with a gun? Like that would have been her killer?
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Do you think he was talking about firing his gun because he... Did he shoot her? I don't think he did.
No.
No.
But they did find the shell casing.
Yeah. So what was that about?
So
maybe he was trying to shoot the propane tank or something, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Okay, so he'd encountered this man with a gun, and he said the man had fired the handgun in his direction, and he was very descriptive about what the man was wearing and the appearance of the area where he saw him. And then he said he got kind of lost and drove around and was lost for a couple hours and then ended up at home around 3:30 p.m. that day.
Yeah, he went into a fugue state.
Yeah.
And just lost time.
Yeah, that happens.
Oh, all the time, right?
But guess what?
They didn't believe him.
Police weren't believing that story.
I can't believe that.
They told Chris that Aaron's car had been found, and according to the interviewing detective, Chris really tensed up when he heard about that. So the detective decided to bluff him, and he told Chris that his tire tracks were found beside the car, even though he didn't know if they were Chris's tire tracks yet.
No, all they knew was that there were tire tracks beside the car.
Right, but then he changed his story again. And he said that he hadn't seen Aaron, but he had seen her car.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. Just terrible. So detectives interviewed Chris for about 9 hours, and they caught him in several lies, as you can tell. So he seemed really nervous and dishonest, and when the detective drove Chris home, he was surprised that Chris had asked him some weird questions in the car. So he's driving Chris home from the police station, and Chris says to him, "How good of a team of detectives are you guys?" Right? And he actually asked him, "Well, how many bodies have you failed to find that you think are out in the desert?"
Oh, those are good questions.
So police searched Isabel Megley's horse ranch, and Nicole, Chris's wife, had told them that she had stashed a rifle in Isabel's bedroom closet. So this was the .22 caliber rifle that Chris took with him to the park that day when Aaron went missing. So Isabel said she wasn't aware of it. She didn't allow guns on her ranch. So she was kind of upset that Nicole had hid this gun in her closet. And everybody's wondering, why did she do that?
Well, it was fired.
But it wasn't a murder weapon.
No.
This makes me think that this Nicole was really involved.
Well, I don't think there's any question that she is complicit in this.
And there are more things that will lead us in that direction as we go forward.
Now we're going to find out more about her.
Yeah. So, Isabel told detectives that on the day Aaron disappeared, she received a text from Nicole saying that she and Chris wouldn't be at the ranch that day. So they were expected at the ranch that day that Aaron disappeared. And they said that they weren't coming because Nicole was sick.
Mm-hmm.
So, how suspicious is that?
Well, it's very. But who called? Nicole called?
Nicole texted.
Okay.
So
that's more...
So both of them didn't come.
Right.
And she called and said she was sick, and they hid a gun in her house.
Yeah.
So very suspicious.
Nicole's involved.
I think so. Now, the next morning when Chris and Nicole went back to the ranch, Isabel had heard that Aaron was missing by then. And she said that Chris and Nicole seemed really tense with each other that day. And Nicole actually told Isabel that, well, Aaron's probably hiding. She wants to make Chris's life miserable. And that Aaron was setting them up and trying to hurt their family by making Chris look bad.
Oh, absolutely.
So she was very...
Those are kind of cryptic remarks.
Yeah. Very critical. Very cruel, really. If someone's missing that's been your friend...
Yeah.
That's a horrible thing to say.
No concern.
No, not at all. So Nicole and Chris were preparing to go back to Alaska at this point. And Isabel loaned them her SUV to move some of their belongings. But when police searched Isabel's SUV, they found a potato launcher.
Oh, now what is a potato launcher?
Well, Isabel had no idea where it came from or what it was. But the potato launcher is kind of a handmade cannon that shoots material out of it, like potatoes. Yeah.
And why would you shoot potatoes?
Well, I guess it could be dangerous.
So it's a weapon?
It's a weapon. And it's actually illegal in California to own one. Yeah.
That's funny.
So I saw a picture. It looked like some, what's that pipe? The white PVC?
PVC pipe.
It looked like a big PVC pipe. With some kind of thing on the end. So it would have shot like a full-size potato,
so
depending on the force.
Some kind of explosive charge that propels a potato.
I guess so.
Okay.
So they found that in her SUV, and she had no idea.
She said, what the hell is that?
But she loaned it to Nicole and Chris.
Loaned the SUV.
Yes. And then that was in there.
Yeah.
So at that point, they had a reason to arrest Chris, and they just arrested him for possession of a destructive device.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have evidence for his involvement in the crime.
Yeah, they don't know if he's involved in her disappearance, but they're definitely thinking.
Well, obviously, because they arrested him on some bogus thing.
Yeah. So
illegal potato launcher.
Yeah. You know, if it wasn't such a horrible crime, it's just a comedy of errors.
No kidding.
But these people are really cruel, mean people. So then, according to Isabel, Nicole became really nervous, and she was saying really odd things. So Chris was taken away to the police station under arrest, and Isabel and Nicole are together. And Nicole's saying to Isabel that she's really worried that Chris is going to mess up the facts because he doesn't know the facts, and he's not going to get his story straight, and the police are going to get him in trouble for something that he didn't do. So she's acting really bizarre.
Well, that's not good for her either.
No. She doesn't seem very nice.
No, she wasn't. And the detectives that arrested her husband, Chris, noticed that she wasn't really interested that much in helping find Aaron.
No.
She seemed to be pretty angry and uncooperative. Now, the horse lady, Isabel, shared the story with police that Chris and Nicole had searched the internet for how to dispose of a dead body.
Wow.
Wow. Nicole said to Isabel, we've watched enough CSI shows to know that if there's no body, there's no case.
Yeah, so she thinks she's pretty smart.
Yeah.
And she's not.
And Nicole had also told Aaron, I don't know where this came from, but she told Aaron that if she had anything else to do with her husband, she'd kill her herself.
Yeah.
So who said that?
Who told the police about it?
Yeah, Isabel.
Someone that had overheard
it. Someone must have overheard that.
Possibly Isabel.
So Nicole had proof that she was home with her daughter Liberty that day. But even if she wasn't, she could have played a role, right?
Absolutely.
In the disappearance.
Yeah, absolutely. She didn't go to the ranch that day. She called and said she was sick. And then she hid the rifle.
Yeah, there's a lot of circumstantial stuff here.
Yeah, I've never seen an explanation for why she would have hidden the rifle.
And just one final thing, and this is all hearsay stuff, but after Erin disappeared, her mom stayed in the apartment that they were renting on base. And according to her, to Erin's mother, every time she'd see Nicole and Chris, they'd stare daggers at her.
No, that's no way to behave.
No. Right? I mean, you'd be thinking, your daughter's disappeared or hasn't shown up. We're so sorry.
Yeah, you think they'd try and be helpful and sympathetic.
Yeah.
Why would they be staring angrily at her?
Well.
It's very bizarre.
It is.
So Chris was bailed out of jail on July 5th. That was 1 week after Erin disappeared. And he was discharged from the service, and then he returned to Alaska. So hundreds of people continued to search for Erin in the desert, and John was cleared of any wrongdoing. His phone and his computer records showed that he was home all day on June 28th, and he'd taken and passed a polygraph test as well. But Chris Lee had lied to investigators, and he had asked several people how to dispose of a body. Also, he told Isabel that he had found a mine in the desert that no one would ever find.
Well.
Why do you say something like that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just stupid stuff.
Yeah. So.
He's pointing a finger. I did it.
Yeah, it's almost like he wants to admit it.
Yeah.
But it was coming together for investigators that Chris had killed Erin and hid her body in an abandoned mine. That's kind of what made sense at this point. Out there. He's talking about a mine. He's talking about these different things.
You know, how you can never find a body.
And yeah, yeah.
So there's enough circumstantial stuff.
To make them wonder. I mean, there's not enough to charge him with murder.
Yeah, but still, there's enough stuff that you're going to be searching.
Absolutely. But there are hundreds of mine shafts in that area. So, at that point, police enlisted the help of Doug Billings, and he's known as Cave Doug to his friends, because he knows the mines that well.
He knows all the shafts and mines and stuff.
Yeah, the Mojave was his home, and he'd been exploring mines since he was a kid. It was just his thing. So, and other volunteers searched the mines just one at a time, just, you know, methodically going from one to another, and detectives participated as well. But they really caught a break when a friend, who had gone to look at the mines with Chris a week before Erin disappeared, showed them photos he'd taken that day. Yeah. So do you think Chris was aware of the photos being in existence?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I would think if you're out with a friend and you're sort of scouting around, you'd be aware of the guy taking pictures.
I would think so, yeah. Well, this really gave them a break, because I think without that, they might not have been able to find her.
Well, no, because they have pictures, and they have the guy who's Mr. Mineshaft person, who knows everything about the mines in the Mojave.
Yeah, he recognized the terrain, and they concentrated their search to that area.
Yeah, see?
So, huge, huge break for them.
No kidding.
So it was Saturday, August 16th in 2014. When it was the last day of their search. A member of the San Bernardino Cave Rescue Team noticed a strange smell at one of the last mines that they were going to search, and it was the smell of gasoline. There was also a shell casing resting near the edge of this mine. So they lowered a bucket cam, and they saw what appeared to be a leg at the bottom of the shaft.
Uh-oh.
So they'd found her.
Sounds like.
Yeah. So the San Bernardino Fire Department's rescue team was called in to help. So they'd been trained to work in tight spaces and doing rescue missions for people who, you know, went wandering and fell in them and stuff like that. So this one guy who was part of the rescue team, who they said had claustrophobia, he was the first one to go down into the mine.
No.
Yeah.
I guess if you're on the fire and rescue team, you're probably not going down too many mine shafts.
No. But
what a place for a claustrophobic. Huh?
Oh, it just sounds like a horrible thing.
And, oh, God,
Yeah.
There's a body down there. And this wasn't just near the surface. This was like 100 feet or more down.
140 feet.
Ah, God.
So there's propane fumes. There's loose rocks. There's a depth of 140 feet. The temperature down in there was 90. The temperature on the surface was 110.
Yeah, you're out in the desert.
Yeah. So they have special respirators, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he goes down, he sees a Sprite bottle, which was Aaron's favorite soda. They saw a rope and a propane tank, like the big white one that you'd use when you're barbecuing.
Yeah.
And then he saw Aaron. He didn't know it was Aaron, but he saw a decomposing body down there.
Yeah, because this is, what, 2-3 weeks?
Well, it's August, so 6 weeks maybe.
Maybe, yeah. She disappeared late June.
Yeah, and this is August 16th, so
almost 2 months.
Yeah.
7-8 weeks.
So that was really nasty.
And this body's been down there for that time in 90-plus degree heat. Ugh.
Yeah.
Can't imagine.
It's horrible. And so he said he was down there for about 45 minutes. So he had this respirator on, thankfully, so he couldn't smell the horrible smell. Until he came up, he said he removed his respirator, and then the scent of the decomposition came off his clothes and just came at him with a, you know, with a fury.
Yeah.
And he was retching.
I'll bet he was.
And he, you know, he said he's used to finding dead bodies. He's found people that got lost before. It's not totally new to him. But this was horrendous. This was beyond anything he dealt with before.
No kidding.
The second rescue team member, Paul Anastasia, he went down to bring up Aaron's body. And another thing he found while he was down there was a homemade unlit torch. Aaron had suffered a blunt force trauma to her head and strangulation. A garrote was found encircling her neck. So it was a paracord with two rebar handles, which are like metal handles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was something that he had to make for this purpose. This is made to strangle someone, right?
Someone had made this.
There's no other purpose for a garrote.
No.
No. So that was wrapped around her neck. And that was thought to be the cause of death. So Chris Lee, he went on trial for first-degree murder of Aaron Corwin in October of 2016. So that's 2.5 years after her death. He goes to trial. And prosecutor Sean Doherty said that the evidence was overwhelming.
Seems to be.
It certainly does.
It's a pretty good case.
Former friends of Nicole and Chris testified about Chris's fascination with how to hide a body and Nicole's odd behavior after Aaron went missing. So this guy, Connor Malachy, who was a former friend of Chris's, said that he saw Chris around 6 a.m. on the morning that Aaron disappeared, and Chris had a bunch of items covered by a tarp in his Jeep, as well as a white propane tank. He saw that peeking out from the tarp. So he said the tank that he saw in the Jeep looked a lot like the one that was recovered from the mine. And when Connor asked Chris that morning what he was going to do with it, Chris told him he was going to blow up a mine shaft with it. So Isabel from the horse ranch told the jury also that she recognized the tank that was brought up from the mine.
Yeah, I guess Chris had borrowed it from her the day before, and she asked him if he was going to have a barbecue. He said no, he was going to use it to play games. What's that mean?
I have no idea.
And he never returned it.
I'm not even going to give it thought.
So a search of the SUV that Chris was driving at the time of his arrest gave him another piece of evidence. Here's how smart this guy is.
Yeah.
They found a garrote exactly like the one found around Aaron's neck.
In his car.
And the shell casing found near the mouth of the mine shaft matched Chris's rifle.
Well, this evidence is totally overwhelming.
Holy cow.
Yeah. I mean, they've got circumstantial, they've got DNA, which we haven't talked about yet.
No.
And they have a lot of evidence.
So, and we got Aaron's friend from Tennessee who testified that Aaron was planning a future with Chris and told her how she was meeting Chris for a special date on the day she disappeared.
Right.
But maybe the final nail in Chris's coffin may have been DNA evidence.
Right.
The unlit torch that they found in the mine shaft had a T-shirt that was wrapped around a stick. Mm-hmm. And the t-shirt had Chris's DNA around the collar, the neck of it.
Of course it did.
And the Sprite bottle that they found in the mine shaft had both Chris and Aaron's DNA on it.
Right.
Bingo.
So explain to me the type of jackass who can't just break off a relationship and decides, well, I'm going to kill this person instead. What kind of mind thinks that way?
You know I don't have an explanation for that. So that was just a question that you were throwing out there.
Because it's something that rings in my head. Why would you do that?
I don't know why you wouldn't just say it's over.
Right. And his wife already knew they'd had an affair, so if it was his baby, so what?
Right. But he felt like he needed to kill her.
Because it's all about him.
Sure.
Right. Well, prosecutors said that Chris Lee had planned to lure Aaron out to the desert and kill her that day because she was just in the way. So he took her out to the mine, he strangled her with the garrote, and he dropped her into the mine like a pile of trash.
Right.
Now, he may have intended to use the propane tank and the torch to blow up the mine afterwards and cover up her body.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he didn't follow through with that.
Well, I don't think there's any question that that was his plan. And either he couldn't figure out how to get the propane tank opened, or he forgot matches, or I don't know. He didn't blow it up.
Because
his thinking was, he's dropped her down this shaft. If he can blow up the shaft and cover her totally up with rock and stuff, they're never going to find her. Right?
Well, yeah, but how can you think about doing that to someone who's your friend or your friend's wife? It's just terrible.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah. Well, Chris testified in his defense.
That's always a smart move.
So the defense was offensive. And it was unbelievable. And that's my opinion, and it's also the opinion of the jury.
Yeah, they didn't buy anything that he said on the stand.
No, Chris claimed that he did kill Aaron, but he said it wasn't planned. He told the jury that it was his intention to break up with Aaron and return to Alaska with his wife and daughter, and he said he had the propane tank in his Jeep because he wanted to blow up a mine. He said he couldn't blow up the mine because he forgot to douse the torch in gasoline. So he went back to the Jeep, and he and Aaron sat and talked.
We were just talking.
Yeah. So he told Aaron he was going back to Alaska with Nicole and Liberty. And this is where the story gets totally outrageous and offensive. He said that Aaron was very upset about not being part of Liberty's life anymore. He said Aaron seemed too attached to Liberty. Then Chris said he remembered a time a while back when Nicole had showed him signs that Liberty had been sexually abused, and Nicole had suggested to him that it was Aaron who was sexually abusing Liberty. So according to Chris, Aaron admitted to sexually abusing Liberty. Then, he said, he just lost his temper and couldn't help himself and strangled her with the garrote. Now, why he had the garrote, I don't know, in that scenario.
That's the big thing.
It's a big thing.
I mean, if it was an extemporaneous act, why do you have the garrote there?
Right.
He was planning on killing her to begin with.
He was. And she didn't sexually abuse that girl. I would bet my life on that.
No.
So he strangled her, which they said probably took a good 5 minutes.
Sure.
Which is a long time to see someone suffering. And then he dragged her by the rope and dropped her into the mine, just like that. Now, Aaron's family members and friends, as well as prosecutors, were just totally disgusted by these accusations against Aaron. I mean, talk about speaking ill of the dead. It's just blaming her.
Yeah.
And making up shit.
But he's done that the whole time he's been questioned. I mean, from the time he wasn't even a suspect and they're just questioning him, he continued to lie and lie and lie.
He did.
And this is the final lie.
Right. And I watched the testimony. He didn't even look believable at all.
Not in the least.
No. And the prosecutor pointed out all of Chris's lies and inconsistencies, which were enormous amount of them.
Yeah.
I mean, just endless.
We can't even list them all.
No, we can't. So the prosecutor actually, this was a cool thing that he did. He had Chris demonstrate how he strangled Aaron. He had a dummy in the courtroom and he had Chris get up and show him how he did it. And this showed to people that, oh, he didn't just strangle her and throw her. It showed what a really violent act, what a prolonged act it was.
A prolonged violent act.
Yes. So the defense attorney asked the jury to find Chris not guilty because it was not a planned, premeditated murder. So he asked for a determination of manslaughter.
Sure.
And I have to say, I felt sorry for him.
Well.
What a position to be in. I wouldn't want his job. There's no defense for this guy.
There isn't.
No.
And that became evident pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he said he told Chris not to testify, but Chris insisted.
Yeah, because he thought he could get away with it.
Yeah, he had quite an ego.
Yeah. But how long did the jury deliberate?
An hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
And they found him guilty.
Yep, he was convicted and he received life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, Chris's wife, Nicole, told detectives that she had nothing to do with Aaron's disappearance. And she hasn't been charged with any crimes. But detectives say that that's still a possibility.
Well, yeah, this is still pretty recent stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, this year.
And I think they're going to take a long look at her and her possible involvement.
They should.
Because I think, I mean, maybe not charging her. Well, I don't know. Maybe they can charge her with felony murder or something like that.
I don't know. I think that she's at least an accessory after the fact, but probably more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know how you can live with a man that's done something like that, although she's probably just as bad. She might have helped plan the thing, right?
She might have.
Kind of seems like she might have. Yeah. So, there's a couple of horrible people that I'm glad aren't going to be around us.
Well, he won't be.
Yeah. She should be locked up.
I think so.
I do, too. It's a sad case for Aaron. I mean, she was just a kid.
She was.
And it's a stupid thing.
And she's
just
starting life. I mean, she didn't deserve any of this stuff.
No. I mean, how many stupid things do 18-year-old, 19-year-old girls do, and they live through it?
A whole bunch.
Right.
Right?
I was an idiot. I was really bad.
Yeah, but now you're an old lady.
Yeah, I'm mature now, but I just think that it's really sad. She was basically a kid.
Yeah, she was.
Yep. Okay, why don't you remind people about your contest, because we still have a couple weeks left.
So, kiddies, get your beer reviews in. We're doing this beer review contest where we want an audio review of a beer. You can do it on tiegrabber.com, or you can do an audio file and attach it to an email.
Yeah, right? Either a WAV or an MP3 would be preferable.
Okay. We're going to give away a t-shirt, a coaster, and a snifter.
Right.
Big time.
So a box of goodies.
Who knows what else you can get.
Right.
So, yeah, we would love to get some reviews. Send them in. We'll play the winner when we announce the end of the contest in mid-January. So you got till January 1st, two or three more weeks, something like that.
Yep.
Send me a review.
And then we're going to play it on the air when we choose it.
Of course we are.
Yep. So that'll be great.
And I'd really like some well-crafted, funny reviews. Because I'm not that good a speaker or an author.
I'm sure
there's people out there that are much more gifted in verbiage than I am. So send me a review.
Well, and if not funny, detailed at least.
Well.
You know?
Anything. I'd like the funny ones.
I mean, I'm always impressed at how much detail you can give on a beer.
I don't even scratch the surface on how much detail there can be given in a
wow.
beer.
Wow. I think that would surprise a lot of people, because I think you go into a lot of detail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do?
What?
That's a good thought. One of these days, I'll take one of my friend's reviews that run like 1,000 words on a beer. It's like a whole text.
Wow.
So I'm going to pick a beer, and I'll find a review written by someone that goes on and on.
Yeah.
And see what kind of prose you can obtain in a beer review.
Okay, but you probably have to get their permission before you read it our show.
Maybe I'll just do it. Don't tell anybody.
Okay, we're pretty obscure anyway.
Right.
No one's going to notice.
Fly under the radar.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the original point. Get your beer review in.
Right.
I can't wait.
And you should be drinking lots of beer because we have the 12 Beers of Christmas coming up in about, what, like a day after this airs, that will air.
Yeah, a couple of days. So
coming up.
So we got 12 beers and 12 crimes of Christmas coming up.
Yep, it's going to be fun.
And it's going to culminate. The 12th day is going to be a review and a reading. I guess not a reading, but we're going to be watching Love Actually and commenting on it.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, Love Actually is probably the single greatest movie ever produced.
Well, and we're going to watch it at the same time. So if you can, you could turn us on and start the movie, and it would be like watching it with us.
Yeah.
And we'll go through it together.
Good idea. We'll warn you. I like that idea.
I like it, too. I think it could be fun.
Okay.
All right. So while you are doing your Christmas shopping, you just might want to give some thought to using our Amazon link, tygrabber.com/Amazon. You do your shopping there, and we don't know what you've bought, and you don't pay anything extra. But Amazon just gives us a little kickback for referring you to our link. So that would be great if you're going to go and do shopping anyway. Why shouldn't TCB just benefit from it? That's just a bonus. So you can always listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and on iHeartRadio as well. Keep those 5-star reviews coming. We're still at 4 stars, and I really want to be at 5 stars.
Well, don't we have to get to 4.5 stars before we get to 5? I don't think
we can jump
from 4 to 5.
Well, if like 20 people this week gave us a 5-star review, we'd jump. And that's just like a little fraction of listeners.
Yeah.
So,
because we have so many of them.
So instead of thinking about it and just not doing it, think about it and do it.
Yeah.
And just surprise us.
Even if it's like 5 words.
Doesn't have to be long.
No. Nope.
Even you can just put in 5 stars and say, pretty good. It's okay.
Yeah.
Don't mind it.
Don't mind it.
Something.
I tolerate it.
They're tolerable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But as long as it's 5 stars.
That's what matters.
That's what we're looking for.
Yes. That's all.
Okay.
All right. Take care now.
I'm getting ready to pregame with the Patriots.
Oh, yeah. Gonna be fun.
Go Pats.
All right, let's go. Bye-bye.
Bye. See you next time.